ik niet tegen.
Heer Olly.
Mijn jonge vriend. Mm-hmm. Daar ben je dus. Je kon me zeker arresteren. Nee. Ik wist het wel. Toen ik je daar achter de tafel zag zitten, draaide het hart me door de keel. Zodat mijn gemoed vol schoot.
Ah, heer Olly.
Och ja, als heer is men omgeven door verraad en onbegrip. Door gelijke bedoel ik. Het is heel bitter.
Ik zat alleen maar achter die tafel om u te kunnen helpen. Als ik daar niet gezeten had, zat u nu niet hier.
Ja, nu je het zegt. Ja, het was heel slim bedacht eigenlijk. Mm-hmm. Net als ik al dacht, als je begrijpt wat ik bedoel. Je hebt die valse kadé goed de waarheid gezegd.
Och, ik heb daar een frisse wind laten waaien.
Frisse wind! Zeg dat wel!
Jelema, jij weer!
En dat was zo lawaai! Dat ik mijn boodschap ben en niet kwijt kom!
Wat wil je? Me aanbrengen zeker?
Dat heeft geen haast. Ik wil nu eerst wel eens weten uit welke hoek de wind waait. Na de zuivering. Ik hou er nu helemaal van voor de wind af te lopen.
Toen heer Olly voldoende was uitgerust, liepen ze verder door het landschap dat steeds kaler werd.
Waar gaan we heen? Ik ben aan het einde van mijn zwakke krachten, jonge vriend. Zonder voedsel of slaap loop ik nu al dagen rond. Terwijl rampoeneren en gelijkknippen me boven het hoofd hangen. En ik me niet eens heb kunnen wassen. Als ik geen schuilplaats vind, zal ik zeker gezuiverd worden, als je begrijpt wat ik bedoel.
Daar is een hut waar we misschien veilig zijn voor de nacht. Oh. De grijsaard die er woont leek me niet onvriendelijk toen ik hem gisteren aansprak.
Wat is er toch aan de hand? Allemaal aanlopen, onrust. En dat terwijl ik vandaag mijn knollen niet eens gekregen heb.
Er wordt gezuiverd. Daarom blijven we liever een beetje uit de buurt van het volkspaleis. Kunnen we hier niet overnachten?
Gezuiverd, hè?
Ja.
Niet zo best. En het is heel ongebruikelijk om te overnachten in het paleis voor overjarige volksgenoten. Heel ongebruikelijk.
Oh.
Als ik niet oppas, gaan ze mij ook zuiveren. Nou ja, kom maar binnen. Op mijn leeftijd is het allemaal één pot nat.
Het paleis voor overjarige volksgenoten was uiterst eenvoudig ingericht. De noordenwind blies er door de kieren en het enige voedsel dat verstrekt werd bestond uit een paar rauwe knollen. Maar heer Bommel en Tom Poes waren zo moe dat ze blij waren met een zitplaats in het stro. En de eerste begon al spoedig te knikkebollen.
Het is prettig om een beetje aanspraak te hebben, maar het is gevaarlijk. Ik moet toch al zo oppassen, omdat ik steeds achteruit denk. Dat is niet goed, want dat doen alleen behouders. Maar bij het bejaren denkt men als vanzelf aan vroeger. Toen was alles gezelliger, zou ik willen zeggen, met blije kinderstemmetjes.
Kinderstemmetjes? Van wie?
Kleinkinderen. Sintel was de oudste en die wilde altijd de baas spelen. altijd ruzie, hè? Dat gaf aardig vertier. Maar op een goede dag had mijn zoon Obol er genoeg van. En toen ging er een andere wind waaien.
Storm, ik luid trouwens wat gek om met jou mee te gaan. Ik ben de oudste.
Begin je nou weer, Sintel? We zijn allemaal gelijk en jij moet gezuiverd worden. Net als Ruk en Sijpel en de vreemdelingen die gevlucht zijn. En, hé, zie je dat? Er brandt nog licht bij de oude. Dat is verdacht.
Diezelfde nacht zat professor Perl-Witskowski in het verre Rommeldam over enige papieren gebogen.
Waarnemingsberichten. De kostelijke wiederballon is signaleerd boven de Zwarte Bergen. Hij is also opgenomen in de noordelijke luchtstroom.
Oh!
Wij moeten hem nederhalen voordat hij de zee bereikt, meneer Pieps.
Ja, dat zou niet zo best zijn. Maar hoe kunnen we hem laten dalen?
Wij kunnen dat verzoeken middels deze knoppen. Als de akkerblader nog reageert, kan ik akkerbleren. Verstaat u?
Ja.
Dan drupt de lacrimazuur op de bidoescapsulen, ja, zodat die zich uitzetten gaan en verzwaderen. Oh. Dan daalt de donderwedelse ballon. Als de akkerblader nog maar werkt, dat is de konendrum.
Wordt die nu zwaarder? Daalt die nu?
Dat weten wij ja niet, omdat wij de autopneumakquadrein vergeten hebben, domkop. Morgen moeten wij in de gebergte zoeken gaan totdat wij hem vinden. En wij moeten ons beeilen, want de wederbericht meldt dat de wind krimpert. Ach, het is ja alles zeer zorgenvol.
De hoogleraar had geluk. Toen hij de knop had ingedrukt, begonnen de zuren inderdaad te werken, zodat de capsule zwaarder werd. De weerballon begon langzaam te dalen. Maar door de krachtige wind bevond hij zich niet langer boven de bergen zoals de geleerde dacht. Hij zweefde boven de zee en koerste recht op het eiland Wirrel af. Daar stonden Sintel en Meeker nog steeds in het maanlicht naar de verlichte hut te kijken.
Er hoort geen licht meer aan te zijn. Ik zou daar huiszoeking moeten doen. Maar ik moet jou naar de zuiveringsinrichting brengen en daar heb ik mijn handen vol aan. Je kunt opa beter met rust laten. En als ik geen soldaat onder arrest was, zou ik jou een dreun geven. Ik ben de oudste tenslotte. Had ik maar geen helm op.
Oh, het is een dilemma. Ik zou KD kunnen gaan inlichten, maar ik weet het niet. De wind gaat krimpen, geloof ik. Maar hoe kan dat? Hij waait toch noord of zuid? Ik voel me weer licht. Ik zou...
Op dat moment staakte de vogel Dilema zijn overpeinzingen en ook de beide militairen vielen stil. Boven het bos was een luchtschip zichtbaar geworden dat voortgejaagd door de wind op hen afkwam.
Wat is dat?
In de behuizing voor overjarigen was het stil geworden. De wind piepte door de dakspanten, maar verder was er niets te horen dan heer Bommels ademhaling en het gemompel van de grijsaard, die slapeloos tussen de dansende schaduwen zat.
Vroeger. Het is verkeerd om terug te denken, maar vanavond gaat het vanzelf. Er zit iets vreemds in de lucht. Het is de wind. De wind der verandering.
Verraad!
Het is erger, meneer Bommel. Er gaat iets gebeuren. Het is een invallers op koers. Er vliegt een grote bal door de lucht. En ik voel me willig, want dan komt storm uit het westen. Ik waarschuw maar even.
Uit het westen? Dat is lang geleden.
Maar waarschuwen? Waarvoor? Wat bedoel je met die bal? Wat zijn dat voor...
Heel lang geleden. Ik herinner me nog... Het is een schande.
Een inval.
Een overval op het paleis voor overjarige volksgenoten. Door het dak nog wel. Kunnen ze wel.
Het is een ballon. Een soort weerballon met een metalen capsule. Dat komt goed uit. Gauw aan het werk, voordat hij beschadigd wordt.
Hoe kan je over werk praten? Daar komen ze aan. Help, ik wil niet geknipt worden.
Heer Bommel wees met bevende vinger op de wirrelaars, die dreigend op de hut afkwamen. Sintel en Meeker hadden alarm geslagen. En toen men hoorde dat er een vreemde luchtbal naderde, waren alle meningsverschillen vergeten. In tijden van nood werd iedereen op het eiland soldaat gemaakt, zodat een zuivering niet langer nodig was.
Zwijg! Orde! Omsingelen! We weten niet wat er in die bal zit.
En zo kon men generaal Oborepel nu aan het hoofd van zijn troepen zien optrekken. Terwijl mevrouw Cadé van een andere kant naderde.
Aanvallen!
Aanvallen!
De wind is noorden.
Noord, hij is zuid. Opsingelen en wachten op het bevel voor de aanval. Paarden, vrijheid en de
we moeten opschieten. Vooruit, heer Bommel. We moeten die capsule leegmaken en dan erin.
Ruzie. Er komt slecht weer. Dat is altijd zo.
Maar niet uit noord of zuid. Dit wordt een storm uit het westen. En van die plek weet ik niet.
Tom Poes wachtte niet langer. Hij beklom de capsule en nadat hij het deksel had losgeschroefd, liet hij zich erin zakken. Daarop begon hij de inhoud naar buiten te gooien. En nu begreep heer Bommel plotseling wat de bedoeling was.
Opschieten, alles overboord, jonge vriend. Dan wordt hij lichter, zodat hij weer vliegen kan. Als je begrijpt wat ik bedoel. Vlug, voordat de kabels knappen en de vijand toeslaan.
Zweeg! Orde! Of ik laat je in de ijzer slaan!
Val toch aan, cirkel! Grote mond, maar doe de omaar!
Er is hier maar één de baas, en dat ben ik!
Hou op met ruzie! Het regent! Voelen jullie dat niet?
Regen op de wind! Storm uit het westen! Wat te doen!
Alles is anders!
Het valt niet mee, jonge vriend. Voor de heer van stand, deze apparaten zitten stevig vastgeschroefd. Als je begrijpt wat ik bedoel.
Vlug, klim erin.
Oh.
We zijn los. Ja.
Los! Dat is nou wat ik noem de wind in de zeilen hebben. Jullie zijn zo vrij als een vogel. Zoiets heb ik nog nooit meegemaakt. Wat te doen? Het is een dilemma.
Helemaal niet, dilemma. Het wordt tijd dat jij ook je zeilen naar de wind zet. Je hebt genoeg tweedracht gezaaid. Nu kan je het goed maken, want de wind is eindelijk west. Rust, rest, zegt het oude vers. Weet je wel?
Deze woorden gaven de vogel te denken. En hij vloog moeilijk tegen de wind in terug naar Repel en Cadé, die nog steeds verbaasd naar Sintel stonden te kijken.
De tijd van ruzie is over. Wind west, rust rest, zegt het oude vers. Jullie kunnen beter gezellig naar huis gaan. Ik waarschuw maar even.
Tegen de morgen hield de regen op. Maar de wind gierde met onverminderde kracht over de zee en joeg donkere wolkenslierten langs het zwerk, zodat het een bleek ochtendkrieken was. In het grijze licht kon men de ballon laag over de opgejaagde zee zien vliegen, want de stijgkracht had toch wel ernstig geleden. Gelukkig hadden de inzittenden dat niet zo in de gaten, omdat heer Bommel het deksel van de capsule had gesloten tegen de tocht.
Dat hebben we goed afgebracht. Gelukkig zag ik direct dat die ding ons van dat vreselijke eiland af kon brengen. Alles eruit en wij erin, dacht ik. Maar het was wel zwaar, hoor. Denk je dat we nu veilig zijn, jonge vriend? Voor ramponeren of gelijkknippen, bedoel ik?
Daarvoor wel. Het eiland moet al ver achter ons liggen en het gevaar zit nu in het dalen. Met zo'n storm zal dat niet meevallen. En bovendien weten we helemaal niet waar we terechtkomen.
Deze woorden gaven een nieuwe wending aan heer Olly's zorgen. En ontdaan werkte hij zich in de enge ruimte omhoog om het deksel open te slaan en een blik naar buiten te werpen. Maar het uitzicht stelde hem niet gerust.
Bergen! Puntbergen! We zullen gepiekt worden! Geramponeerd, bedoel ik!
Professor Perlitzkowski was die morgen reeds vroeg de bergen ingereden om naar zijn ballon te zoeken. Maar het was een vreugdeloze tocht. De wind huilde tussen de pieken en laag vliegende wolkenslierten bemoeilijkte het zicht. Zodat hij tenslotte bij de vergeten kust aankwam zonder iets te hebben gevonden. Hij stapte uit en staarde mistroostig naar de branding die daar tegen de rotsen beukte.
geen spoor. De donderwederse kogel moet in de meereswater afgestort zijn. Schrikkelijk, meneer Pies. Zo in een kostelijke wederballon met allerhand wetenschappelijke apparatuur verzwonnen. En mijn arbeid is ganz teruggesteld, zodat ik wellicht nimmer zal weten waarom de wind hier immer zuid of noordwaarts waait.
De wind is west, professor. Wal west. En kijk, daar staat een vuurtoren die niet op de kaart voorkomt. Dat is wetenschappelijk toch ook wel interessant.
Goh, west.
Ja.
Hoe kan men de Zuid-Noord-Passage studeren wanneer de wind west is? En we zoeken een ballon en geen lichttoren. Merkt u zich dat aan? Ja, hebben wij de teugen niets. Ach, hoe schön. Nu zullen wij toch de apparatuur aflezen kunnen. Hij is te snel gelandet, maar hij kan ons wellicht iets wetenschappelijks melden over de Noord-Zuid-fenomeen. Laat ons de capsule nader betrachten.
Ik heb mij ernstig bezeerd. Ik wist het wel, er komt geen eind aan mijn lijden.
U hebt te hard aan dat koord getrokken. Daardoor is de ballon leeggelopen.
Hij meldt werkelijk iets. Ik hoor stemmen daar binnen. Maar ze klinken niet erg wetenschappelijk, prof.
Prof, wat is hier dan los? Wat mag dat beduiden? De blitz moet ja in de communicator geslagen zijn. Dit vraagt om een insnijdende onderzoeking, meneer Pieps. Het is de Pommel. Ach, hoe kan men zo wetenschappelijk arbeiten? Dat is ja niet mogelijk. Men kan niet in de capsule verblijven. Er is ja allerhand apparatuur daarin om de Noord-Zuid-windfenomeen te registreren.
Die is er niet meer. Die hebben er even uit moeten gooien om van dat eiland af te raken toen de wind naar het westen draaide. Om dat te registreren hebt u geen apparaatjes nodig, hoor. Ik kan u alles haarfijn uitleggen. Kijk, als de wind is zuid, dan trekt Obel Gepel uit. Maar als je Kadé zingen hoort, komt de wind uit noord. Ze zong trouwens vals. En alles was heel vreselijk. Omdat het rampoeren mij boven het hoofd ging.
Ja,
zodat ik geheel slapeloos zonder eten uit de lucht ben gevallen.
Also, wetenschappelijk kan ik dus vaststellen dat niets wetenschappelijk vast te stellen is. Het is vreselbaar.
Ik wist het. Daar is eindelijk de aflossing.
De vuurtorenwachter uit het begin van dit ware verhaal. Sippe Misser.
Ja, ja. Windwest. Rustrest.
Ik ben de aflossing niet. Ik ben hier verongelukt, zodat ik de oude schicht kan ophalen. Als de professor tenminste een beetje benzine voor me heeft, met het oog op het rijden.
Oh. Ik neem het niet langer. Mijn wrakhout is op. De visvangst is slecht. En morgen ben ik jarig. Dan val ik in het ouderdomspensioen. Ik ga hier weg. Ik gooi mijn baantje erbij neer.
Pauw, men kan iets niet nedergooien wat niet bestaat. Dat is wetenschappelijk vastgesteld. En uw lichttoren existeert ja niet, omdat hij niet op de kaart staat.
Oh, nou, dat is dan mooi opgelost. Ik had het zelf kunnen bedenken. U kunt met mij meerijden naar de bewoonde wereld, heer Misser. Als ik tenminste een beetje benzine krijg van de professor hier.
Dat werd geregeld. En omdat Tom Poes intussen met de assistent Pieps de ballon in de driewieler van de geleerde gewerkt had, en de heer Misser niet gehinderd werd door bagage, konden ze vertrekken.
Gelukkig maar. Ik ben aan het einde van mijn krachten.
Tegen het eind van de middag leunde de bediende Joost uit het venster van zijn torenkamer en keek naar het overtrekken van de wolkenvelden.
Het afscheid van de zomer. Maar met een goed glas port is het te verdragen. Als heer Olivier op reis is. Ach, daar komt hij aan. En hij heeft bezoek bij zich. De vakantie is afgelopen. Ik zal maar een paar blikjes gaan openmaken, als ik zo vrij mag wezen.
Vakantie is geen ontspanning, als je dat soms denkt. Oh, ik ben geheel uitgeput. En ik zou zelfs gelijk geknipt zijn, als er geen westenwind was opgestoken.
En ik zou niet zijn afgelost. Het klopt toch maar precies met die wind.
Paul, er klopt ja niets. De wind is niet wetenschappelijk onderzocht geworden.
Alles is goed afgelopen. Ik nodig u uit voor een voedzame maaltijd die Joost zeker klaar zal hebben.
Inderdaad, heer Olivier. Hmm. Ik heb mij verstout een eenvoudige potage à la conserve en enkele saucisse choucroute voor te bereiden.
Oh.
Mag ik u voorgaan?
Goed afgelopen. Ik ben benieuwd hoe die westenwind op het eiland Wirrel werkt.
Wel nu, ook daar huilde de westenwind en de regen kletterde op het dak van de eenvoudige boerenhoeve. Maar binnen was het droog. Een aangename geur van knollensoep trok door de eetkeuken waar de familie hongerig aan tafel zat.
Gezellig. Net als vroeger. Dit is nu waar ik altijd naar verlangd heb. Een rustige oude dag.
Rustig? Voor jou wel, maar voor mij niet. Koken is geen mannenwerk. Ik lijk wel gek om hier te staan, terwijl mijn vrouw niets doet.
Begin je weer, dit is de tijd voor de vrouwen, dat is maar goed ook. Mannen zijn tirannen, jij bent de ergste. Ruzies en oorlog, daar ben jij goed voor. Jij altijd.
Ik wou dat pa opschoot. Ik heb honger.
Doe het zelf, kwaaie aap. Het wordt tijd dat jullie manieren leren.
Dat die radier dampt het moord.
Wat weer? Ach je, wie wind zaait zal storm oogsten. Ik had het kunnen weten. Maar ik heb zo het idee dat het niet lang zal duren. Met al dat geruzie en geschreeuw. Wat ik zeg, zuidenwind. Nu breken er weer tijden aan waarin een vogel tonen kan wat hij waard is.
Zwijg! Orde! Ik neem het niet langer. Ik zal zorgen dat hier orde komt. Ik richt een partij op. De partij voor orde, vrijheid en recht. Leve de Pova! Voorwaarts, Sint-Doel. Naar het kasteel. We wapenen. We zullen vechten voor onze vrijheid.
Opa zegt dat er geen ruzie gemaakt moet worden. Hij houdt van rust, zegt hij. Ik waarschuw maar even.
Zwijg! Orde! De oude moet zijn mond houden. Hij kan beter naar het rijkste huis voor ouden vandaag gaan. Ik ben de baas hier. En in het vervolg kan je me beter aanspreken met generaal.
Uw gastelijkheid is zeer prijzenswaard, meneer Bommel. Ja. Maar het is schade dat u mijn apparatuurplatten verzwinden. Ik zal opnieuw moeten aanvangen met de studering des Weichhardtwindes.
Ach, die wind, die hebben we genoeg bestudeerd. Eerst begreep ik het niet zo goed, maar door mijn diep gedachtenleven weet ik nu precies wat er gebeurt. Kijk, eenvoudige lieden hebben er gauw last van wind. Het gaat er maar om uit welke hoek die waait, als u begrijpt wat ik bedoel. Uit de ene hoek komt een generaal met recht en orde, en uit de andere hoek komt een cadet, die altijd gelijk heeft. Die komt met gelijkheid, bedoel ik. En de eenvoudige lieden vergeten alles van vroeger en waaien met iedere wind mee, terwijl men een heer altijd wil ramponeren. Dat is moeilijk, hoor. Net wanneer men gewend is aan het ene, verandert de wind en dan komt het andere. En prettig is het nooit. Maar ik heb de enige manier gevonden om geen last van de wind der verandering te hebben. En dat is om gewoon maar een heer te blijven. Wat jij, jonge vriend?
Ja, ja. Hoort u wel dat de storm afgelopen is? De wind is zuid.
Nu trekt Obol Repel uit.
Ja. Het is ja allemaal zeer onwetenschappelijk. Maar de wijn... Het is recht aangenaam.
You're listening to Radical Scotland on Repeater Radio. That was Dawson with Process Purpose Vacuum Pack. And our special guest tonight is Ger Reid from Dawson, one of the best Glasgow bands ever. Absolutely ferocious and inventive punk band. They were part of a whole great scene in the early 90s with Stretch Heads, Dogface Hermans, Badge Wearer, Archbishop Kebab and so on. Since then, Ger's been involved in all kinds of projects, including working with Dance and Glasgow Improvisers Orchestra. So we're absolutely delighted to have him here on Radical Scotland, talking about the Glasgow Music Collective, the politics of around DIY and underground music, and the beauty of collaboration and community. And following our discussion, we're going to have a mix by Ger and our resident turntable genius, Mariam Razai. I'm your host, Stuart Smith. This is Radical Scotland with Ger Reid.
Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs, out in Bearsden, which, you know, was always involved a lot of ribbing from the punk rockers, because we were the, I mean, rightfully enough, we were the suburban kids, but I always feel like I always was standing up for my mum and the fact that she was a single parent bringing up five kids and holding down a job, so it wasn't masses of money and blah blah blah. I guess it starts really with I went to school with Ali Begbie, who's in Dawson, and I play with him still in some shapes and Painted Dexry, and yeah, we used to walk home from school when we were 10 together, so I take the piss out of him because I always say he was the latecomer because I was at that school from when I was 5. He didn't arrive until he was 10. But so, yeah, I mean, music, I was thinking about this, there's so much to say. And it's, I don't know about you, but it's really interesting from the age of like 10 to 14, how much different music I was into, like different kinds of pop music and then some soul music and then you know, big country stuff like that, and then rapidly into sort of The Cure and New Order and Joy Division and all that. But in the space of about 3 years, I went from, you know, being into Blondie to being into sort of The Temptations and Martha Reeves, and then into Joy Division and The Cure. And so the first music that me and Ali played, well, here's the story, is that I got a guitar when I was 14. I bought a guitar and tried to learn for about 6 months. Kind of got nowhere, got really bored with trying to play House of the Rising Sun. Eventually I kind of put it to one side, and then Ali, around that time, got a drum machine and a guitar himself. And I'd basically kind of given up on it. But then I used to go around to his, go to his front room. I guess we were 15, and just drum machine and distortion pedals and guitars. And like, you know, we were both rubbish. Both couldn't play at all. But obviously it just didn't matter. And it was kind of like, if he could play two chords and I could play two chords, then there was a few variables that we could put together. So that was, yeah, we'd just make a racket. In fact, there was flangers involved as well, not just distortion. we would just make a racket in his front room, and then a wee bit later at school, we started a covers band and was, yeah, playing Joy Division and Birthday Party and all that.
Oh, that explains the flanger.
Totally. And there wasn't, and that didn't last so long, I don't think. I remember we played a gig in the school, and then quite quickly, I think after that, we wanted to start writing songs. And so the singer in that band was Ian Baird, who's manager of all the, what were the Craig Tannock, or are the Craig Tannock venues in Glasgow. Okay. So I've known Ian since then. We used to hang out when we were teenagers, and now he's he runs Stereo and Mono and Flying Duck and all that. So Ian didn't keep going, but the guy who played drums was a guy called Graham Thompson. Tom and me and Ali just started to write stuff. And Tom is and was really fascinating. I was thinking about this as well. Like, I was thinking about that thing of wanting to make music to dance to and where it came from, because because most, I mean, I wonder if it's that dance music was almost coming through sort of New Order and all that stuff. Well, the other thing that was really interesting was that around that time was the start of hip hop, and Ali especially was really into it. So that's a really interesting component of it, is actually we weren't really into soul music. Tom was really into James Brown, and stuff. He was really into James Brown, and which brought a really nice funkiness to the start that I don't think me and Ali would necessarily have had. But hip hop was a big thing, and I remember Tom getting the first Public Enemy LP, and just being totally blown away by it. Just really like we'd had those Street Sounds LPs, you know, Electro Records. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of them, and that was all like Dougie Fresh and Fat Boys and all that, and we were really into that. But going from that to Public Enemy was just like whoa, just such a harder sound. And so anyway, I was thinking about that today. I was thinking about how, even though it was noisy guitar music, and to me or to us, maybe it was always music to dance to as well. So that was Dawson. Really interesting. We rehearsed in a place that was run by the manager of Wet 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 in Maryhill. And we always used to laugh because every single time he came in the room to check something with the PA, he would mention something about Wet 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 when none of us were at all interested. And then I don't know how we found out about the other studios. We might have just been looking for other studios and saw that there was this place in Park Circus and just tried it out. I think that's how it went. I don't think anyone gets a tip off or anything like that. And that was Tower of Studios that Craig Tannock and Callum McLean started. And we hilariously were known as the band. We would go and rehearse for 1 hour, and the songs were so short that was like we could run through the songs twice and, you know, start writing a new song in an hour. And that was incredible. To actually, Craig Tannock actually recorded and mixed our first demo tape that we did in 1988, I think, which, incredible guy and incredible. I remember so clearly just the conversation being really unmusical, and we were incredibly unmusical, and it was really just like, just describing sounds and having fun describing sounds with somebody to try and get an idea of how you wanted the overall thing to sound. It was just such good fortune to meet him, to meet someone that was like that good-natured and hilarious and unpretentious about music. And really supportive as well, actually. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really supported us. And he actually, I was saying to you before that, it was really hard to find places to play gigs. And we put on a couple of gigs. Well, actually, the first gig we played actually was upstairs at 46 West George Street, which I've missed that part of the story, actually, which was... Before Dawson started playing, we were going to Splash One happenings that were happening in, I think it was 85 and 86. I was trying to look it up. I don't know if it went later than that, but we would basically, Splash One would happen, was a nightclub run by Bobby Gillespie. I never knew if Stephen Pastel was involved with the running of it, but I know Bobby Gillespie definitely was. And it's one of those things you could actually get into a place when you weren't 18. You didn't need ID. The bouncers would just kind of be like, what age are you? And if you said 18, you know what I mean? Or they would just say, what's your date of birth? And if you could remember your date of birth, it checked out to be 18, then you would get in. But that was a really formative influence. So we would go to Splash One. We were still at school, and we'd go to Splash One on Sunday and sometimes walk home and get home at 4 in the morning and then get up and go to school on the Monday. And the bands that were at Splash One, we got to see like Sonic Youth and Firehose. So, yeah, so in a way, I think we were into fire hose before we were even into the Minutemen, actually. I think they found out about fire hose first. So yeah, we got to see Sonic Youth and Fire Hose, and 23 Skidoo played as well, which was totally incredible. And they were moving, they were less in their funk stage, and they were more into, they were also into electro and hip hop stuff, but it was totally, totally brilliant. And famously, Jesus and Mary Chain played there when their first single had just come out. And so before they were like playing the Barras and there was riots and stuff, they played this like 46 West, I think it was called Daddy Warbucks before, or I can't remember the name of it. I think it was Daddy Warbucks at that point. But anyway, it's Jesus and Mary Chain played and to like a 300 capacity place or whatever it is. And the bass amp blew up and... basically, so that's, you know, the Jesus Mary Chain without the bass amp is just basically feedback and shouting, which was a really amazing show. So yeah, it was really hard to find places to play back then, and Craig Tannock was one of the people who started to find places and gave us an opportunity to play. Like, folk don't know that Craig Tannock scoped out what became King Tut's Wawa Hut. Mm. That was just a boozer that had a back room, like a really big function suite. And Craig started putting on gigs there, and then DF saw that it was a really cool space and bought the whole place up. But so Craig gave us some of those early gigs. We played a band called Capone and the Bullets, who I think are still going. They're like a ska band. And then we got to play with Teenage Fan Club with John Peel DJing. That was a later gig that Craig did. That's just to say that Craig recorded our first demo and was really supportive, and that was really great fortune to meet him. And then I suppose the next part of the story was that we also recorded our first single at Tower. And but with Callum, so that's when I started doing the record label as well, basically, which was called Gruffwit Records. Mm-hmm. Still is, actually. Still, the Some Shapes record came out on Gruffwit and other labels as well. And I want to do more with it. But so that's when I started the record label, sent it to John Peel. Actually, we'd already been played on Radio Scotland by Peter Easton, the mighty Peter Easton on Beat Patrol, and I think John Kavanagh played us as well. But so I do remember the first time we were played on Radio Scotland, but then I also remember being in a bedsit in the West End and picking up the phone, and John Peel was at the end of the phone.
Wow.
He was just like, got your single, I'm into it. I'm going to play it tonight. And then we arranged to do sessions. And it's... You know, a lot of people know this, and maybe some people don't know it, but I'll just, almost a cliche, but just to go through it, this, the importance of Peel at that time is just, you know, I mean, it just can't be overstated. Not just the thing of getting played on the radio and doing it. I mean, doing a Peel session was like the, you know, for like punk rockers to get paid BBC rates to go and play a Peel session, but basically would fund you to do a tour that was going to lose money. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Because, we were playing small gigs and not getting guarantees or any of that stuff. So there's that. There's the money of doing a Peel session, but then there's also, the fact that people would get in contact with you. You would read out your address and people would get in contact with you, and other bands would get in contact with you. So a really famous one for me, actually, was... God Is My Co-Pilot from New York. Mm. John Peel played God Is My Co-Pilot. That's what it was. And I sent off to buy their CD. And then they said, oh, we're hoping to come to Europe to do a Peel session on some gigs. And I set up some gigs for them. Glasgow and Edinburgh and maybe Stirling. And then they became some of my great pals, and I've played in God Is My Co-Pilot when they came to Europe, and myself and Craig had a band called Pope Joan, which was in about 19 94 or 5 that had Caroline Crabble in it.
Mm.
And
saxophone player, yeah.
Saxophone player, yeah, who weaves in and out of this the story mm. quite a lot. So, and Jason Boyce, who was in Dandelion Adventure.
Scene in John Robb's book Death to Trad Rock gives you a really good history of that kind of post-punk thing. So I guess that's the context for a lot of the stuff you're talking about here. A lot of bands are playing on Peel, and there was a big Scottish contingent of kind of noisy, weird punk bands. So the Edinburgh side of things, the Dogface Hermans. But then Glasgow had Dawson, Stretchheads, a few other bands, and you're all kind of hooked up with other bands around the UK. And there seemed to be a lot of collaboration and touring and support for each other.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That is a great place. And also the John Robb book also is crucial for us because it played because it talks about the Ron Johnson Records bands and Big Flame especially were just like a sort of massive influence. I mean, kind of like I want to say pretty much all. Only conscious influence I probably had when I started playing guitar. started playing guitar in Dawson anyway, was to try and sound like Greg O'Keefe from Big Flame.
So it's idea to crank the treble and
back pickup only, treble at full. Yeah. So you're right, a lot of those people were connected, and even people like John Robb's own Membranes were already connected to the Pastels, and Pastels were connected with, yeah, and Ajay Sagar from Dandelion Adventure, he was really connected with the Membranes. But yeah, and I've actually got a list of, well, maybe that's a bit later, but the other bands that were around in Glasgow at the time were Badge Wearer, Whirling Pig Dervish, who were both bands that I put out on Gruffwit, and Stretchheads were really pally with Dog-Faced Hermans, and then we got pally with the Stretchheads, and then got pally with the Dog-Faced Hermans. And actually, the first time Dawson went to Europe in 1991, the Dog-Faced Hermans organised those gigs, and we went and they played the gigs. Around that time, we started the Glasgow Music Collective as well, which initially had it was kind of inspired because there was an Edinburgh Musicians Collective that had rehearsal studios and stuff. I think that Dogface Hermans were involved with, and so we had all these sort of highfalutin ideas of what we would do, and the Glasgow Music Collective pretty much just ended up just putting on gigs. That was all we did. We talked a lot about trying to get sort of collective studio spaces together and everything, but it didn't happen. I wanted to get a wee name check of the people who started the Glasgow Music Collective, which was me and a woman called Joyce Monaghan, who was in a band called We Are the Men. They're crucial in that it was such a blokey scene. There was some women that played music, but it was so blokey. But We Are the Men were, you know, it was all women, and, you know, by design, do you know what I mean? We're like, we're gonna make a band that's all women, and kind of challenge a lot of the blokey kind of, yeah, blokey, muso kind of attitudes to play in. Mm. And I don't know if they were into the Raincoats and bands like that, but there was definitely a kinship and mm. and really, yeah, really strong attitude. Mm. So they were really important, I think. So Joyce from We Are the Men, a guy called Jim Kavanagh who ran Egg Records. And Egg Records put out more kind of tuneful, you know, C86, that the cassette, if folks don't know, that was the cassette that NME put out in 1986 that had a crossover of more sort of tuneful guitar bands like McCarthy and Closed Lobsters and bands like that, and then slightly noisier stuff on Ron Johnson Records like A Witness and Big Flame. So Jim Kavanagh did Egg Records, which was a bit more like the tuneful kind of sort of, you know, yeah, that kind of slightly also sort of quite militantly anti-rock music, which is brilliant. And there's a lot of those bands like the McCarthy who went on to be Stereo Lab and all that I really loved. But anyway, Jim, the funny thing about Jim Kavanagh and Egg Records is that one of the bands he put out was called Remember Fun, which turns out to be Raymond McDonald. Yeah. And me and Raymond, like, literally 30 years later had done a duo show and we're having a beer in the bar afterwards and chatting about playing in bands back in the day, and we hadn't realised that I certainly hadn't realised that Raymond had been in Remember Fun and that we'd been, like, you know, 2 degrees of separation away from each other. Which is hilarious. I was just finishing up the first group of people that were involved with the Glasgow Music Collective, which was Joyce Mornin from We Are the Men, Jim Kavanagh from Egg Records, Angus McPhee, who is in a band called Glue, and was inspirational in lots of ways. He was a wee bit older than us, and he had proper DIY spirit of like making his own records and making his own t-shirts, booking his own tours. Anyway, so Angus, we were the three main. I think Sandy Blair from a band called The Poison Sisters, if you've heard of them. I think he was also in that first iteration, but definitely me, Joyce, Jim and Angus. And so if we're talking about looping around, and the Music Collective put on a bunch of gigs. It went from 1990 to 1998, I think, put on lots of different stuff. But crucially, I'd say maybe two of the crucial bands that we put on was the Honkies, which was also Caroline Crabble.
Yeah.
And Richard Harrison drumming, Andy Diagram playing the trumpet, and Kathy Hume, actually, who has been played at, I think, 2 Counterflows ago. I can't remember the name of the group she was in with Robin, but...
The Hairdressers.
Yeah, I knew something like that. Yeah, yeah, that exactly. Was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So Kathy was in the Honkies. John Edwards joined that band actually later on. So that's when I first started to know John in the early 90s. And I was looking at the old Music Collective poster stuff. I'll send you a link to a page that's got a bunch of flyers actually, which is interesting. Because I think it's... I mean, I love how people are so diverse and eclectic in their tastes now with music. I think that's one of the things with the internet, isn't it? It's people can access different stuff and they make connections between stuff. I think it's much less tribal. It used to be really tribal. So although it's not, doesn't seem like a big deal, we would put the Honkies on with like some kind of hardcore band or kind of Discord Records band. And, you know, people were definitely open-minded enough to get into it. But I think it was quite rare in those days. And fair play to the Honkies. They were, you know, they were totally up for it of bringing free jazz to noisy guitar audiences, you know. So the Honkies was a really crucial one. And just to say, that was the other side, that there was the kind of anarcho-punk thing. Mm-hmm. The anarcho-punk thing was, we had a lot of friends in that world as well. Bands like Disaffect and Sedition, especially, and a bunch of others. Vomit Head was a band that played as well. But and then Sedition became Scatha a bit later on. But so they were all, those folks were also coming to see gigs that had like Honky's free jazz stuff, and those folks were not listening to free jazz at home. Do you know what I mean? They were listening to noisy guitar stuff. The Honkies was a really important band, and they played quite a few times for the Music Collective. And then the X was a important band. Obviously, the first time they came to Scotland, we organised a bunch of gigs in Glasgow, Edinburgh, Stirling, Perth. I think it was...
Boys Brigade Hut in Stirling.
Oh yeah, were you at? You were.
Actually, I was blizzard. No, I was 11. So. I was. I love that building because it's has an amazing motto on the front.
What does it say?
Under the eave, and it's a quarrelling is taboo. absolutely love that. But it blows my mind to think the X played there, and because the X have every gig they've ever done listed on their website, which is really interesting. So that's how I found out about that.
Okay, yeah, and they famously the X. They started off with Terry, and it was Luke that was playing the bass on that tour. And the first song, there was like doors at either side of the stage. There was like a few stairs that went up to the small stage with doors either side. And the first song, Cat counted it in, and they opened the doors and came out like a like a cuckoo clock. one on either side of the stage. That was quite hilarious.
Wow.
That was, yeah. So the first time the X played in Glasgow, and Andy Moore from Dogface Sermons was playing in that configuration. Yeah, it was a formative moment. Mm-hmm. Not just that the music was totally incredible and the energy was through the roof and the politics was amazing and they were super friendly, nice, hilarious folks. But also just the culture they came from, that coming from a sort of deep culture, deep Scot culture in the Netherlands. We just didn't have that in Scotland. We've never had that in the same way that London had it around that time. And Manchester's had more of it, and I think Leeds has had a bit more of it. But yeah, Scotland's just not had that. And to meet people who came from like such a different culture of daily life, do you know what I mean? Rather than just daily life being, I don't know, like the... It's that thing, isn't it? We're talking about space again. It's just like if you don't have space that allows you to define the culture outside of the mainstream culture, it's really hard. And they came from a world where there was space and there was collective non-private space that was sort of politicized, and to get to go and see that was just like totally opened our eyes to different ways of living as well as not just different ways of thinking. The other important thing about the X was the musical influences as well. The guy selling merchandise on that first X tour is a guy called Gert. Do you know Gert? He wrote a book called Not for Rent, which I think you'd be really interested in, which is it's kind of counterculture stuff in the UK. Written with a woman called Stacey Wakefield and Gert.
Oh, okay.
And it was sort of covering road protests but also music stuff. The One in 12 Club in Bradford, which was which is still open and was like a massive, in the UK was the closest thing we had to something like a social, like a European social centre. Mm. 1 in 12 club was in Bradford. Yeah, it was a place that we played a lot. Dawson played a lot and all the bands afterwards have played a lot. Mm. And it was, it was an anarchist run social centre. Why the hell was I talking about that?
The ex.
Well, I can't remember how I got to. Oh, yeah. People. Thank you very much. Yeah. So I'm not sure. I still don't know how I got to 1 in 12. But anyway, Gert was the guy who was doing the merch for the ex that came on that tour. And he became a really brilliant friend. And he ended up doing the live sound when Dogface Sermons moved to Amsterdam. He ended up doing the sound for them. Mm. That's why I got to the 1 in 12, because okay. Gert's book, Not for Rent, covered the 1 in 12. So that's what that was.
Okay.
So Gert became a really brilliant friend. And the ex, obviously, they've always been really into folk music from all over. At that point, they were getting really into Hungarian folk music.
Mm.
And they did like a cover of a Musicass tune. And the Dawson folks had always been into different kinds of folk music as well. We used to have a wee distro that we took when we did gigs that had like, you know, hardcore punk records and kind of Ron Johnson-y records and then like Bulgarian folk music and Hungarian folk music. And especially Bulgarian or Hungarian folk, because folks from those countries didn't have any currency to buy records. So you quite often get letters from folk wanting Gruffwit stuff and not having any cash. So the only thing they could offer in return was folk music, but the records were totally amazing. Hungarian dance house compilations and kind of more obscure Bulgarian folk music, which is some of it's like, you know, really nice and gritty.
So I got a few I picked up in the Stirling Oxheim a couple of years ago.
Okay.
It's a Musicass album. There's a couple other on Hungaraton, which I guess is like the state label.
Exactly,
And it's a hurdy-gurdy music. It's great.
Okay.
It's just like... Cool. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And that's it? It's relentless, isn't it?
Yeah. It's great.
And then it was also interesting because it was... there was so much chat about Scottish folk culture then. It was kind of interesting. Obviously, I'm not massively knowledgeable about Hungary at all, but there was just that huge folk revival that happened. And even though a lot of the stuff was sanctioned and came through the state record label, I mean, like I say, I'm not knowledgeable, but it seemed to be like the folk culture was really blossoming and being supported. Not to say that that's straightforward. I don't know how it ties in with notions of Hungarian nationalism or whatever, but still just from on a musical, you know, interfacing via the music, it seemed like really cool and really kind of vibrant. So Gert, who now runs Red Wig Records, who put out King Aisoba loads of sort of post-punk stuff and everything. It's a brilliant label. At this point, I wanted to mention that there's a tape that Gert made for me, copied for me, of Moorish music from Mauritania, which is Khalifa Ould Ide and Dimi Mint Abba. And what's interesting is that Dimi Mint Abba